This week's podcast is about learning online. I'm Jim Lingle from Hunter College and Boston University. There's a new startup high school in New York City. It was putting its curriculum together over the summer. As in most states, biology is a required course for all students. The favored biology textbook, published by Holton, aligned with the Regents exam, is listed by the publisher at $105 per copy. That's 105 and no cents. This for a book for a ninth grader, one of many necessary to float him through the curriculum, or sink him with a backpack full of weighty tomes. It's no wonder that the school decided to provide the biology course, as well as the rest of the curriculum, online. You want to learn biology? Connect to the school's Moodle server, click your biology course, and see the assignments from your teacher. Click on the introductory reading, and you're connected to the appropriate chapter in the Holt textbook. You can connect from school, from home, from the library, from your iPhone. Do the same for world civilization, for math, for English. Though, in the English class, they are allowing hold-in-the-hand books in the form of novels. The school has effectively weaned itself from textbooks, and also from much paper and pencil. Providing learning materials online is growing at the high school level, a reflection of what's already happened at many colleges. Not just textbooks, but assignments, quizzes, exercises, problem sets, articles, discussions, presentations, podcasts. In most cases, it's the same content made available more efficiently, though in some cases it has allowed new forms of learning to take place. In the new high school in New York, each faculty member has put all of the necessary learning materials for each course online. From there, students can work on it whenever and wherever they have the opportunity. As we plan an online course, how should we think differently about learning? After helping educators at a variety of schools and colleges and companies to build and improve online learning experiences, I share in this podcast some of the key discoveries about this new mode of learning. The first discovery I want to talk about is the quality of content. Generally, what you put online must be more carefully crafted than what you say in the lecture hall and more precise than what you hand out in the classroom. Students expect that readings, assignments, and the quizzes they see on the computer to be better thought out and better prepared than what they see in the classroom. The diagram that you quickly sketch on the chalkboard will not suffice for an online illustration. It needs to be redrawn on the computer so that its concepts are immediately clear. Remember, when students confront your teaching material online, you're not there in person to explain it or to provide the further details. The document that they see must cover all the bases. Each piece of content posted online has got to be self-contained and self-explanatory so that students know exactly what they're supposed to do and have all the support they need to do it. So think about your online content like a can of soup. If you're at home in your own kitchen, you can put a bowl of soup on the table for your guests. And if it's not exactly right, you can fix it. You can add some salt, warm it up, thicken it a bit, put a dollop of butter in it, suggest they try it with crackers, and maybe explain how good it is for them. But if you need to prepare and preserve that soup for someone going on a long trip, well, you've got to make sure it's just right. So when they open it and eat it all by themselves far away, it tastes just right with no explanation, no additives needed. The next key discovery is small chunks. Today's students just don't spend hours at a time with a single activity on the computer. And the act of reading on the computer or on the iPod is quite different from reading from a book or paper. The setting, the technology, the habits of mind, the expectations all tend toward short increments of time, multiple distractions, and multimedia expectations. You can't simply post your hour-and-a-half lecture to the website or paste the 20-page full-text article to Blackboard and expect it to have the same impact as in the classroom or in the journal. It's better to divide your content into manageable chunks, that is, pieces of information that can be confronted and understood in 15 or 20 minutes, rather than 50 or 80 minutes. So, find within that long lecture of yours 5 or 6 key concepts and develop a 5-minute podcast for each concept. If you're writing, use subheads more liberally in your writing. Read a bit, and then ask a question that requires an answer to be submitted online. it's better to build the student's work around 6 short assignments rather than 2 long ones. The next key discovery has to do with active assignments. And what we've learned is that it's not what you do, it's what they do. Now, in the classroom, the teacher is at the center in most cases. The students focus on the professor. That's what the faculty member does. It's what the faculty member does that makes the difference. Not so with online work. The only thing you get to do online is to prepare the content and pose the assignments. From then on, learning is dependent on what the students do. So the key to successful online courses is to craft a set of activities for the students to do. Such as read this, look at that, ask yourself this, write that, discuss all of this with your classmates. The clearer and more active the assignments, the more likely your students are to follow the course of study. Think of your online course as a series of verbs. Begin each assignment, each item, with an action word that directs the students to do something. Read, consider, compare, discuss, browse, defend, explain, think, find, comment, reflect. And for each assignment, make them produce something, a short answer, a contribution to a discussion, a response to a quiz question, a well-founded essay, something they can produce and turn into you. The next key concept has to do with multimedia. Wherever possible, illustrate the ideas from your course with media that go beyond the written word. Think of the many ways that your academic ideas can appeal to the eye and the ear, the two great gateways to the mind. It's much easier to do this online than on paper, so take advantage of things like maps, diagrams, illustrations, paintings, images, photos, animations, graphics, drawings, sounds, music, voice, visuals. Socrates and Plato used all of these in their academy. So can you. You can make them yourself. You can license them from the textbook publisher. You can find them freely on the web. Or ask your students to help you construct them. The software tools for finding, gathering, organizing, creating, and editing multimedia learning materials are more powerful and easier to use than ever. Multimedia works. It helps students understand ideas. It provokes new kinds of thinking about old concepts. Not just multimedia presentations of the teacher's ideas, but multimedia reports from students. Consider assigning projects that require students to express their ideas in several media at once and turn them in online to you. The next key discovery is frequent evaluation. The research on student engagement finds that many small evaluations work better than a few big exams. Students learn more this way, they remember it longer, they find it more useful. The more opportunities your online course provides for students to turn something in and have it evaluated, by you or by the computer, the better. So, add some self-correcting quizzes to your course. Require a weekly, if not a daily, response to a course assignment from every student. This keeps them connected, and it notifies you of students who might be falling by the wayside. Most of the systems that manage online learning, such as Blackboard and Moodle, make it easy to construct these kinds of evaluations and to organize the results for you online so that feedback and grading is easily accomplished. Finally, the last key discovery is called the learning sequence. These teachers at the New Hart Startup High School are learning to structure their courses for an online environment. They're now thinking of each course as a sequence of activities that students go through as they learn the material. For instance, the biology teacher has divided his course into weekly sections. In each section, the students follow a carefully crafted sequence of online activities. First, there's a pre-assessment. A short 2 or 3 question self-correcting quiz to see what the student already knows and what they don't know about the subject. Then they go into a close reading, a serious and detailed look at a key concept in the textbook in most cases, but often guided by an essential question posed by the teacher. The next activity is a written response. This is an opportunity for the student to summarize the key idea in his or her own words, send it to the teacher online, and get feedback. Next, they go and explore a little bit. They do some wide browsing. The teacher provides some websites and other resources online to get them thinking beyond the sources in the text, maybe even providing some conflicting points of view. Okay, now the students read and thought a little bit. It's time for them to contribute to a discussion. So they go to a discussion board online where the teacher has posed a question. Other students have responded to it, and The students make their own responses and comment on each other's contributions. Then the teacher might assign a little collaborative project. Go online, contact two or three of your classmates, and create a short presentation that you can post online for other students to look at. Finally, at the end of each little section, the students have to produce, either individually or as a small group, some kind of a little capstone project, putting it all together, what they've learned about the concept, perhaps illustrating it with some illustrations, and submitting it as an online presentation. And finally, to end the whole thing, there's a self-correcting quiz, 5 or 6 questions, the questions drawn from the state regents exam, that shows how much they've learned. As this online learning grows, we'll all learn more about what works best. But by following the guidelines above, you have a better chance to develop an effective online course of study. That's all for this week's podcast from The Power to Learn.